Blog Talk Radio.
Again, I'm hanging on the fence again, I'm always on your mind. I put my lyric and my lifeline on the line. And ain't no limit when I might shine, might grind. You rolling with it at the right time, right now.
Only for the dollar sign.
Bad girl, leave it now. Sir, leave it now. On your pulse like a CDM. Gas on the bitch like a premium. Hard laugh on the bitch, all in the fast. I ain't been a bad bitch here before in the cash game. I'm a savage, kind of carrots. I'm a name, run the atlas. I'm a natural, I'm a rat.
I'm a savage, I'm an asshole, I'm a king. Shimmy, you can tell your nigga he can meet me outside. You can babysit him when I leave him outside. Ain't no other love like the one I know. I done been down so long, lost so. I done came down so hard, I slow. I done see forever, all a real nigga won't.
Love's gonna get you killed, but pride's gonna be the death.
Trust me.
All I want is loyalty. 10-4, no switching sides. Feel something wrong. You acting shifty. You don't vibe with me no more. I need
loyalty.
Tell me who you're loyal to. Is it money, is it fame, is it weed, is it drink? Is it coming down with the loud pipes in the rain? Big chillin' only for the power in your name. Tell me who you're loyal to. Is it love for the streets when the lights get dark? Is it unconditional when the robbery don't start? Tell me when your loyalty is coming from the heart.
Tell me who you're loyal to. Do it start with your woman or your man? Do it end with your family and friends? Or your loyal to yourself in the sense? I said tell me who you're loyal to. Is it anybody that you would lie for? Anybody you would smile for? Anybody you would die for?
That's what I'm for.
I said I'm geek and I'm fired up. All I want tonight is just get higher.
All I want is loyalty.
It's so hard to be humble. It's so hard.
dollar out here. Heavy. Probably some swag, swag. Yeah, baby. Yo. Perfect fit. My lip perfect fit. Perfect fit. My lip perfect fit. Rep the fit. Gotta rep the fit. Chase a chick. Never chase a bitch.
Chase no bitch.
Mask on. Fuck it, mask on. Mask on. Fuck it, mask on. Perfect fit. My lip perfect fit. Chase a chick. Never chase a bitch.
Chase no bitch.
Two cups. Toast up with the gang. From food stamps to a whole nother domain. Out the bottle. I'm a living proof. Ain't compromising. Half a million on the coup. Drug houses found. Looking like Peru. Graduated. I was overdue. I'm a pink minus. I can barely move. Ask about me. I'm gon' bust a move. There you go. Red James. 33 chains. Ocean now. Damn. Cruising big game. Pit fire. Side bump. God. That's a liability. Big fire. Hit the gas. Yeah. Boosting my adrenaline. Big fire. Purpose. Yeah. Miley Purpose. Big fire. Purpose. Yeah. Miley Purpose. Big fire. Represent. Yeah. Gotta represent. Chase a chick. Yeah. Never chase a bitch. Big fire. Mask on. Yeah. Fuck it. Mask off of me. Mask on. Yeah. Fuck it. Mask off. Big fire. Purpose. Miley Purpose, big time, chase a chick, yeah. Never chase a bitch,
chase no bitches.
Photo maybe, I drive anything, yeah. Buy my range, yeah. Make them go insane, yeah. My guillotine, drink from Melton, second beans, yeah. Go to those extremes,
let's go, let's go.
Parliament,
Parliament,
Calamari wins, yeah. Parlay in Vegas. We was in the business,
go, let's go.
Before the business, yeah. Theodore Lindsay, Theodore. Smoke prescription, yeah. Focus on the mission,
put my
intermission.
Hold on,
never take a break. We can't pull on, switch states, switch down fire plates.
Switch,
ain't no way, ain't no fucking way. No, we contemplate, we didn't contemplate. No, rock the bank, we gon' rock the game. Again, they gain, we gain. Gain, well, they are not the same.
We been
purposeful.
Yeah,
my lip purpose,
be it fine,
purpose,
yeah,
my lip purpose,
be it fine,
represent,
yeah,
gotta represent,
gang, gang,
chase a chick,
chase.
Never chase a bitch,
be it fine,
mask on,
yeah,
fuck it, mask off,
be it fine,
mask on,
yeah,
fuck it, mask off,
be it fine,
purpose,
yeah,
my lip purpose,
be it fine,
chase a chick,
chase. Yeah,
never chase a bitch,
be it fine,
mask on, fuck it, mask off, mask on. Fuck your mask off. Mask off. Fuck your mask off. Gas off. Never know it, huh?
We ready to roll? Okay then, let's go. It's that moment. The moment of the evening you definitely don't want to miss. We got Mona and Elijah non-script on the drip. And on the drip we talk that literary shit while taking articulated risks. So trust, your ears gonna love you for this. We commit to this misbehavior and myth. And written scripts that framed our intellect improperly, boasted by low-quality scholarly actors with thinking in poverty, like occupants of public housing property. Our novelty is highlighting thoughts from Arthos, carefully cultivated with Elijah and Flo. Authors come to this show, and when they go, believe they leave fully motivated. Yo, literary talk located on the Drifting Mic platform in pure form, like when life is born. Raindrops come hard, but there is sun after the storm. So for the next 2 hours, soak in the light as the shining rays of the night fills you with life. We got two dynamics on the mic. This network is Drifting Mic, and you are listening to Literary Talks. Literary Talks with Mona. What's up, y'all? Elijah, Radio. Pull up.
And we're live. I finally got it right this time. I pressed the right button. Yeah, it's going to be a good night. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Literary Talks with Mona. Welcome to Literary Talks with Mona and my co-host, Elijah Foreman, on Drip the Mic Network. Okay, so Elijah is, I guess he's running a little late, so... I guess we'll just give him a little time. So, I lost my train of thought. Okay, welcome to Literary Talks with Mona. My co-host Elijah Foreman, I guess, will join us shortly. We are here on Drip the Mic Network. Shout out to the intro. The voice you heard was the CEO of Drip the Mic Network, Isis Pulmonologist Robinson. Shout out to him. Shout out to his lovely wife, Deidre Robinson. Yay! And they're back, y'all. They was on vacation. I was by myself for a couple nights. Elijah, shout out to Elijah. He started a new job, and so he's not going to be able to co-host every Saturday, actually. Every Wednesday he's been able to be here, so hopefully tonight he'll be able to join us. Oh, what a week. Okay, so tonight we have a very, 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 very special show with a very special guest. Our guest tonight is not quite an author, but our talk will consist of literary because he's actually an outstanding poet. So I encourage everybody to call in 646-378-0355, press 1. If you want to ask any questions, you want to say hello to our, special featured guest for the night. Or if you want to, ask any questions or say anything, please press 1. Or other than that, you can just call in and just listen to us. All right. Okay, so I have a couple of announcements. I think Elijah is here. Okay, stand by, everybody. My co-host is here. I'm going to unmute him. Stand by. Hey.
What's going on, everybody?
What's up?
Welcome, welcome,
welcome, Elijah, my co-host Elijah Foreman. It's kind of noisy in your background. You okay?
I'm actually at work. I'm good.
Yeah, is it busy tonight? Elijah.
I'm about to go somewhere quiet in a second, though, but it's a little busy, not that bad.
Oh, okay. Well, shout out to Elijah. He's at work, but he's still going to try to co-host with me tonight. Welcome. Okay, so...
Yeah, definitely. I'm here.
All right. Well, thank you. I've been by myself a couple of Saturdays for the past... a week, so it's a little lonely when you guys are not here. I was lonely. So our past guest, I encourage everybody to visit the Literary Talks with Mona business page. If you have missed any of our shows, you can find the links for all past shows on the Literary Talks with Mona on the business page on Facebook. So this past Saturday was a very, very awesome interview with an author by the name of J.B. Barrage. So I encourage everybody to go check out his interview, J.B. Blige is an author, but, you know, he talks about, you know, his years in the industry. He talked about mental depression, mental illness among men, how it's kind of like, you know, considered taboo in the society to, you know, for a man to admit he suffered from depression. But he was very candid about, you know, his, you know, how he suffers from depression. And it, you know, society sometimes have you make men feel like as if it's not, you're not manly, you're not masculine if you admit that you do suffer. But, you know, he's like an advocate, you know, for it, and he, you know, he goes down and he gives speeches. Yes, 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 it is. You know, society will tend to, you know, so he was very open in Kansas, so it was a very awesome interview. So I kind of, I encourage everybody to know. Yes, it is.
Society has things very twisted. I've gone through things where it's like, I've been told as a man that if I didn't bring a paycheck in the house, I wasn't a man.
I lose my masculinity
if I'm not working, if I'm not bringing in the dollar. So that tells a lot of guys that are going through mental health, like, this dollar, this piece of paper is more important than this flesh that's standing in front of you.
Right,
that can
right.
mess guys up mentally.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
very much so.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead,
When you're dealing with women who, I don't want to say materialistic because it's not really about material things per se. You're just dealing with women who were raised by men that were very, you know, busy, that always kept some type of income. And throughout their whole life, their young adult life, they've never seen their dad down. If you've never seen your dad down, then it's kind of hard for you to be with somebody and he ends up having a rough patch and you don't know what to do at that point to help. And that can that caused a lot of relationship issues. And, you know, it's sad because it's a way of life. People go through rough patches.
Mm-hmm.
But there are guys who feel like we can't go through a rough patch. Because the minute we go through a rough patch, not only do we have to deal with the stress of that, but we got to deal with the stress of everybody behind us calling us a bum now because we're going through a rough patch. But just five years ago when I had all this money, I was the man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's tough. It's a tough thing.
Very, very tough. I went to high school with a guy. He had it going on. He was gorgeous. He was on the football team, and he, you know, very intelligent. He wasn't a dumb jock. You know, he was a straight A, you know, athlete. He was very good at football, so he was a football player, but he was, you know, a straight A athlete. And, you know, he got accepted to college, and, you know, after his first year completing college, you know, just one day out of the blue, you know, we get notice, you know, at the school that, you know, he has been charged with murder. We was like, who did he murder? Turned out, you know, he had a baby while he was in high school. So, you know, during his first year of college, he was going through a lot of stress with his, you know, with his child's mother, and ended up snapping because she wanted more money. She told him, why are you going to school? You need to be working. You don't need to be going to school and this and that. I can't go to school because I have your son. And he ended up snapping and just messing up his life because he ended up killing her because he just snapped. You know, like just the pressure.
Wow.
You know, And, you know, you just never know what anybody is going through. Like, for this kid to have everything going for him and for him to just snap like that, just messing up his life is just, you know, is just very tragic. And what's interesting about, but, you know, he actually had a, you know, I mean, rest in peace to the young girl and then her grandmother actually ended up getting hurt as well. Her grandmother was in the house, but he did about 20 years, and he's home now. But there's been, like, protests, like, he should have got life for, you know, killing this girl. And but his lawyer was able to, you know, rule in temporary insanity, you know, where, I mean, he had no priors or nothing, but he did take a innocent life, no matter what she was doing to him verbally. At the end of the day, he took an innocent life, but he did 20 years. But most folks will argue getting 20 years for taking a life, an innocent life, is not enough. You know, because he did 20 years and he was able to come back. He's able to be back in the street, you know, before he reached 50. Like, they just don't feel like it's fair. I know her family, you know, protest, you know, they try to get an appeal and stuff. But he's home, but he's not, you know, in his right state of mind. And sure enough, you know, his lawyer was able to plead, you know, temporary insanity that got him 20 years where he's able to come back home. But personally, I feel like he needs to be back in there, because I heard, you know, he just do all type of crazy stuff. He's not himself. He, you know, he hasn't been able to maintain a job. He's basically, like, out of the street, a bum. Like, you know, so somebody like that, I feel like, just leave him, you know, incarcerated. Like, you put him back in the street just for him to, he's not the same. He's not doing nothing productive with himself. So you're just going to put him in a position where he's, you know, he's out there begging for money. He's not working. You know, he haven't, you know. So now he's going to be, like, end up doing something crazy again and probably end up taking another life. So I don't understand why they let somebody like that out, you know. I feel like you should move him,
To be quite honest, I really don't think the powers that be care that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because here's the thing. Prison is big business. So at the end of the day, if you get a guy like that that does 20 years, let's just say he was 20 when he went in. That means he's 40 now. So In their mind, they feel like he's coming back anyway. This is how a lot of people talk to guys. Huh?
I believe he was 18. I believe he was 18.
So,
I think he was 19. By the time he got, you know, he was something. He was 19. He sat in the county for, like, you know, he might have been 20 by the time they sentenced him. I know he sat in the county. It took about 2 years for his trial to even start, actually.
Yeah.
He might have been 20. But he did get arrested when he was, like, 18, though, when he snapped. But,
yeah, so there's a lot of situations where you have a guy who gets, you catch a case at 18, takes you 2 years to get sentenced, now you're 20. So now They give you 20 years. Even if you plead insanity, you got 20 years. You're just on a different tier of the prison. So you come home at 40, and most of the time, these COs, they're telling you on the way out, I'll see you when you get back. So it's like these guys already have it in their mind that you've been here for so long, you spent half your life here, so all you know is jail. You're not going to survive out there. That's how these guys think. Now, There are a lot of situations where people shock you. You got guys that are in prison with a plan. They finish school, they go out, they get jobs, they live good lives. But then you have some situations where it doesn't happen like that. And guys that end up falling underneath the cracks, bending under pressure, and they'll end up back in prison. So most of the times, the COs that are turning their nose up to guys like this, they'll tell you, I'll see you when you come back. Because I know you're coming.
Yep.
And that's how it is. So I really don't think the powers that be care that much, because it's like, I know he's coming back. So let him go ahead out there, year or two, He might be homeless, probably can't find a job because he never worked. He was young when we got him. So he'll be back in about 6 months. That's how some of these guys look at people like this. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. Especially if you're black or Latino.
Yep.
You're behind the eight ball immediately. Immediately. They don't give you any time to sit there and try to regroup. When you take that walk and you come out the cell with your bunk in your hand and you're getting ready to leave, you're going to run to about two or three COs that's like, I'll see you when you come back next year. Like,
most
what type of shit is that to say to somebody? But that's how they feel.
They don't care. Yeah, yeah, most of them.
They don't care about who you
don't have.
It's business.
Right.
They don't get paid without you being an inmate. Because what are you housing? If you can't get this person in the jail cell, what are you housing? That's just how it is.
Yep.
That's just how it is.
Unfortunately. But just the topic of mental illness was very interesting, you know, to hear a man, you know, open up so candidly. So it was an awesome interview. So I encourage everybody to go back and one click. I said one click. I'm thinking of books. Check out the link. It's available on Literary Coffee Moment business page on Facebook. Alrighty. I had a couple of announcements before we introduce our guest for tonight. Did you see the flyer, Elijah?
Yeah, I saw it. You just tagged me in it.
Yeah, I know. So you know our special guest for tonight. Yeah, I'm excited.
This is a familiar face. This
dude,
he's been a special guest about four times on the show already.
I know, but it's different because he's like, you know, he's going to be on the other side, you know, of the chair, of the desk, of the, he's going to have a different hat on tonight. He's going to be in the hot seat.
That'll probably make it even more fun to him.
Oh, no, he wasn't saying that. I kept telling him that we was going to grill him. He was like, nah, we ain't doing that. Oh, I can't wait. I'm about to have some fun. No, but, yeah, so before we get to the podcast, I usually make, like, my little weekly announcement of what's going on in the literary world. Not really much, just I'm also known as Bona Promote, so I promote for authors. So there's another week of, you know, awesome releases. So if you're an avid reader, you're looking for a new read, you know, check out my page, Bona Promote. It's on Facebook. I also have a business page, Bona Promote. Talk to the Heart Promotional Group is a promotional page that has more and more authors. Like, it has a link of authors that I don't promote for. So you have, like, a variety of reads to choose from. So make sure you check those out. There's nothing new other than, once again, Blue Nose Publication. You know, my company, along with Jabril Williams, we have an anthology coming out. Elijah, where's your story at? Where's your story? Elijah.
My story is done. I honestly haven't even looked at my laptop in the last 3 or 4 days. I've been working so crazy. So when we get out of here and I get a moment, I'm going to send it over.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, you're good. We talked about it last week when you showed me the cover. And I should have been got in contact with you. But like I said, it's between my podcast and other projects I'm working on and then actually working, I've been all over the place lately. So, you know, that's
okay. Well, send it to me because we're because I kind of like I was distracted because I'm trying to clean up. So okay, so on this anthology, it's an erotica anthology by the authors and guest authors of Blue Moon Publications. So the stories are by me and Jabril Williams, author Shanai Nicole, also a Blue Moon author, and she's on the anthology, and also Serene Ari. She's technically not a Blue Moon author yet, but she will be soon. And then Elijah Foreman, yeah. So it dawned on me that I didn't have Elijah's story yet because I had got so distracted trying to clean up, going over, like, rereading my story and Jabril's story. And then I had did light proofreading for Shania. So, and then Serena Reese, she did her own editing. I didn't even open hers yet, but I'll scan through it. But we just wait. Right now, we don't even have a cover anymore. That cover we're not using because I can't get the person that did it. Well, I mean, look, does every erotica cover has to have like a sexy tone?
Man, with the story that you got us writing, it needs to be sexy. That cover wasn't sexy enough. We talked about that already.
Yeah, I know. Well, it depends on how you look at it, you know. I mean, you got the heart, and then I changed the title. You know, so originally the title was called Never Need Another Lover. That was the overall title of the book. Then after that, each author's story will have their own title, individual title, but the overall title of the book originally to go on the cover was called Never Need Another Lover. And my wonderful partner, Jabril Williams, he didn't like it. He was like, no. He hates it. He hated it. I'm sorry, I'm pressing the buttons on the phone. He hated the title. So he was like, no. Bury that. So then he ended up coming up with a long, it was like a long, so I shortened it to When the Heart Wants. And, you know, so it kind of overall, When the Heart Wants still fits the story. So I'll give a brief synopsis of what the anthology is about. Then we're going to go on and introduce our guest for the night. So it's about, is it about five? Okay, so it's four of us. So it's about, well, this project started out with seven authors, and now we're down to one, two, and then Shania makes three. Serene makes four. Elijah makes five. So it's five authors, but four stories because Jabril and I collaborated. And then you got Serene, Shania, Elijah. So it's four couples who are attending a summer retreat to help. So each couple's relationship are like in a you know, like trouble zone, you know, and each have their individual, you know, relationship issue, and this retreat is supposed to help them bring the spice back into their relationships, you know, help them figure out what's wrong with their relationship, and, you know, so that's the plot. And this retreat, you know, a lot of, you know, the counselors of this retreat believes in, you know, spiciness, sexual tone to help a couple overcome any other issues. So they believe sex can conquer all. I don't know if I believe that, but, you know, it makes for a good
sometimes
reason.
Sometimes, Mona, you know, we all grown here, so I'm going to say it. There are times where you just in a bad marriage and you just got to let that go. I get that. if y'all are together but you're not connecting and, you know, you just don't have nothing in common, let it go. I completely forget that. But see, there's some times where if you're a man, your wife just needs you there. And there's when you're a woman, your guy just needs to get his man down there a little wet. Sometimes. Not all. Not all.
Yeah, but
there are
do you believe that?
That arise.
Yeah, but do you believe that certain do you believe certain issues, certain problems that, you know, that sex, you know, maybe it's just a lack of passion, and, you know, if you bring a passion, they could overcome, like, any other problem that they're having?
It could be. Like I said, there are some couples that are out there that just don't have the passion with each other. They've been together so long. These could be high school sweethearts. If you think about it, if you get with somebody at 16 and y'all 38 now, you've been with this person for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think about it that way. You pushing 40, you've been with the same guy or girl since 16. Y'all done dropped 2 decades with each other. So it's going to come to a point where, you know, the spice, it comes to a point where the spice is not there anymore, and you got to find a way to get that spice back. So, yeah, I do. I do think that it comes to a point where, you know, sex does play a part. Plays a big part. It's a lot of temptation out here.
Well, this
a lot of temptation out here.
Right. Well, this will be interesting. It'll be an interesting read to see how each couple will overcome their issues with the retreat. What's interesting about my couple, mine and the girl's couple, is that, well, you know what? I'm not going to give the story away. I'm not going to give it away. But our couple is actually interesting. You know, they have an interesting scenario, so they're not the typical, you know. But anyway,
I got the wild couple. I got the couple that argue all the time, show up late and stuff, because they in the car arguing still. See that. Fellas, that's the lady right there. She don't want to tell you, but 99% of the time, most women that be going off like that, either you doing something wrong or you ain't doing something at all. And in most cases, it's because you ain't doing something at all. She just need a little poking. That's all. Need a little poking. Wake her up with a nice breakfast the next morning. I guarantee you she'd be your best friend. Some, not all. So, ladies, don't be killing me in the comments and stuff, but I know that's how y'all do. Y'all tried to kill me and Sharif last week, so don't do that. But, you know, no.
Well, look forward to that on an erotica anthology presented by Blue Nose Publications. So, should be released in the next week or so. Now, I just got to get a cover, so. We'll figure it out. But anyway, all right, everybody. So I'm going to introduce our guest for the night. Everybody, make sure you call in 616-378-0355, press 1 if you want to chat, ask a question, or just shoot the breeze. Okay. I keep pressing this button. Hold on. Okay. So our guest tonight is, he's not exactly an author, but he's an outstanding poet. Head on over to Spotify, and you will, you type in his name. So his name is Isis Poem poemologist Robinson. I'm back to my tongue twister. Poemologist Robinson. But I think it's just poemologist. So if you just type that in, then all his poetry will come on, and you know, he's like, you know, phenomenal. He's also the CEO of this network that we're on, the Mike Network. So it's Isis, Poemologist Robinson. So, you know, he just agreed to, you know, to be in the hot seat tonight, to chat with us. He has like a very interesting background. And I'm also like his manager. So I'm looking forward to booking some upcoming shows where he be doing like open mic, you know. So he had a show set in Houston, Texas, where he resides, but he had to put a pause. But I'm gonna announce his new date for his appearance soon. Hopefully, it should. As a matter of fact, I think it's sometime this month. So I'll, you know, keep everybody posted. So, without further ado, let's introduce our guest for tonight, Just the Mic CEO, Isis Poemologist Robinson. Yay! Let me do that, the applause button. Yay! Hi, Isis. Where is he? Isis.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, hey, welcome back.
Yeah, I wasn't, I'm muted at first, so I was sitting here talking. Yeah, I didn't hear me. But what up, though?
Did you? Hey, oh, I had to unmute you. Oh, I'm sorry. Which one is your number? Your number is probably 281?
Nah. No, my number is 832.
Oh, you're 832. Okay, so 281 is Deidre. Is Deidre here? Welcome back, Deidre.
She in the building. She in the building.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. What up? Elijah, what up,
Nathan,
brother?
What's good, brother? How you feeling?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. I could be better.
That's what's up, man. I'm glad to hear it. Glad you had a vacation,
yeah,
man. We all need one, at least one a year.
Man. Yeah, man. Gotta get it in.
Definitely.
Well, I love you guys.
I know you in the back, man.
You're okay.
DJ be wanting to beat me up sometimes.
We hope you guys enjoyed yourself. Okay, so.
I got to excuse my phone.
It was lonely here without you guys. It was very quiet.
Oh, but I think you held it down, though. You held it down.
Yeah, I did. It was very quiet, but I did. All right, okay, so. All right, I didn't, I made the mistake of not, because I didn't finish your bio. I didn't post your bio on the page. So I did like a bit intro on you. So I want you to, you know, in your own words, you know, give a verbal, you know, brief bio on yourself, introduce yourself to the readers. Our listeners, let everybody know who is Isis Poemologist Robinson. Oh, I said it correctly. Shoot.
Yeah, we're going to have to tighten you up on that. All right, but ladies and gentlemen, I am Isis, the Poemologist. I am the CEO of Drip to Mic Network, like she did say. Who am I? The poet. As a lot of people know, a lot of people who's heard my story, listen to past interviews or has talked to me before, they know that I come with a past. I have a long, long, long list of felonies. But the thing about it is those felonies were kind of a – they were kind of the blessing and the lesson. So what I mean by that is, as you all know, I was fucking up. You know, I was – all the shit that come with it, you know what I mean? All the shit that come with that side of it, everything, you know. And to make a long story short, it was something that every time I got locked up, which was a lot, I always gravitated toward my poetry. You know, it wasn't for anything specific other than that's just, you know, you got to find something to do in there, you know. So my thing when I was locked down was working on my poetry and my body, you know, so I'll, you know, get into working out. And then I started writing poetry for other people. Basically, it was just a way of feeding myself, to be honest. You know, after a while, you know, after you do so much time, you know, even if you've got somebody looking out for you early on, you know, after you do so much time, they begin to fall off the longer you're in there or whatever. Elijah, I think you know what I'm talking about there. You know. So anyway,
definitely.
And you know, things like that happen. So then you got to start finding a way to take care of yourself in there. You know, you got to find a hustle, and that's. And, I mean, that was my hustle, you know what I mean? Amongst other things, but my main thing was just I would be writing pieces to, like, people's, you know, people's wives, people's family, people's moms, people's dads, you know, kids, everything, you know. And it just, you know, I'm skipping a whole lot. I'm leaving out a whole lot, but I'm just trying to keep the answer as short as possible. And then skipping ahead, I got into this program. This was the last time I got locked up, and I got into this program called the Second Chance Program, which gets you into college. Now, mind you, I didn't even have a GED at this point, right? So I hadn't even been past the 10th grade. But this program actually simultaneously you get your GED, I mean your high school diploma as you're working on your degree. And so what the program is called, the Second Chance Program, basically what it does is it gets you into college, pays for all your books, pays for transportation, lunch, everything you need. It gives you everything you need. And it's ran by former felons. The main guy was released from prison for murder. He did like 20-something years for murder. Got into Berkeley, went to the program to Berkeley. Again, he just added some other things to the program, and he took over the program. So he ran the program of the guy that you couldn't bullshit, though, the guy. Like, I used to try to bullshit him or whatever, right? But you couldn't bullshit the guy because he knew everything that I knew. He come from the same cloth that I was cut from. So all the little bullshit, all the excuses I used to give him, he was like, come on, man, I've been there, done that shit. Come on, you know, let that be an excuse. Get them, man. So, you know, so I got blessed to get into the program. So while I was in school, I was picking my classes and I saw Poetry for the People. I said, oh shit, let me take Poetry for the People or whatever. And so then I'm skipping all the way ahead to the end of that class. So basically I kind of took Poetry for the People and I fucking bodied it, right? I bodied that class, right? And on a level that I didn't even that I was capable of. And so my teacher, she had she was also just happened to be the supervisor for the California prisons or whatever, right? So she ended up taking the piece that I used as my final, and she had it published in the California school curriculum, California's prisons curriculum, right? So she had it put in there, and it became a part of the curriculum. So that's kind of what gave me, you know, the hope, the actual push that okay, you know, maybe I can do something with this poetry. Pushing ahead. I begin to get blessed here and there. People ask me to perform different places. So it just turned into a thing that I didn't even expect it to turn into. So now, pushing forward, here he is in 2022, and you know, I have my network and have some some pieces on Spotify and working on more things to come. So that's me in a nutshell.
Oh, okay. All right, okay, so I have a few questions before I ask my question, Eliza. Do you have any questions?
No, not yet. Pretty much straightforward so far.
Yes. Okay, so let me rewind. I feel like anything went by a little fast. Let's rewind for a second. Okay, so... you said you were like, you know, messing up real bad.
Yeah.
At what age? What age was this?
Well, it started early. Early in my teenage years. I moved out of my mother's house when I was about 16. You know, just differences. And a lot of my my brothers and sisters could probably relate to this. So. You know, I'm not going to go into too much detail with my stepfather, but I had one of them fucked up their stepfathers or whatever. And I just had to get away from that situation or whatever. And I ended up getting out on my own. Well, I mean, I'm not going to say, like, on my own. It's just that, you know, I got with some other dudes and, you know, we started doing some things. And, you know, it started there. And then from there on, I ended up going to, like, other cities, went to another city, did some things. Matter of fact, me and my brother, we was kind of doing some things back and forth, going from one city to another, doing some things. Then from there on, I went to, you know, other places and things. And I just, man, I have, like, 11 felonies at the end of the day. Like, 11 felonies, like, after all it was over, but... You know, like right now, you know, I mean, we're talking like 15 years ago. You know, it was the last time anything like this ever even, like, any trouble even came to me. Yeah, probably about 15 years ago. So pretty much, you know, I actually challenged myself to change. And when I say change, a lot of people think I turned into, like, this choir boy or I did everything right. No, fuck that. That's the furthest from the truth. I'm still the same nigga. Like, I still, you know, like, I still talk shit. I'm still, you know, I'm still cut from that cloth. It's just the other decisions now. And, I mean, I'm too motherfucking old. You know, you got to, like, understand that. You can't keep doing the same shit. That's first and foremost. So that's something I noticed. I had to change years ago. But you know, I understood that I have a grind, I have a hustle, I have a drive in me. But I was steadily using it for things that was really beneficial to me in the long run. You know, so I started to think to myself like, look at all of the bullshit that you've accomplished, all the shit that you've accomplished on the other side of the track. Just imagine if you put that shit to some good use, you know. And so that's been mostly the focus and the drive of what puts me where I am now. You know, I have it all figured out? Probably not. But, you know, I'm not where I was mentally.
Right. And so this is the point that I wanted to get to. That's why I wanted to find out exactly, like, at what age, you know, you was, like, you know, messing up that, you know, as opposed to what age that you finally, you know, decided that, you know, it's time for a change. Like, you know, do you feel like, you know, there's nothing cool about, like, a 50-year-old, 60-year-old gangster? You know, like, even in, like, your
40s,
right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but see, here's the thing, to be honest about that, to be honest, it depends on what you're actually doing. You know what I mean? If you're 50 years old and you out here thugging, like, you on a block, you know what I'm saying? You, like, you know, you selling dimes like that, nigga, you should be ashamed of yourself. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
I don't want to stop anybody from having to get out there and get it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not, you know, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you out there and like I said, if you ain't at a plateau, a particular plateau, by the time you fuck 50, by the time you 30, then, you know what I'm saying, then you need to be doing something different with yourself. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying whether you
right.
should or you should not be out there because I'm never going to hustle. I'm never going to knock it. You know what I mean? But
right.
If you're still on the block, you know what I'm saying, if you're still doing the same shit you're doing when you was 18 at the age of 30, then that might not be the thing for you to be doing.
Mhm. No, not at all. Okay, so I feel like I wanted you to tell your story because you know, because you're not quite an author, but you are a poetry. To be a poet is
right.
literature. You know, so we're gonna get to when at what point in your life that you turned to poetry. I know I've spoken to several incarcerated authors, you know, that are currently incarcerated, and most of them weren't writing prior to their bids. You know, like they might have had the skill, but, you know, it just wasn't something that they did. They didn't write books when they were on the street, you know, and it
right.
was something that decided to do once they became incarcerated because, you know, for one, you know, there's a lot of time to do it. And I think, you know, a lot of them, some of them decided, you know, like, you know, this is like a turn, you know, towards a positive direction, because I think some of them do want to. But then you have some incarcerated authors who come back home, and they stop writing, you know, like, you know. So obviously it was something that they did, like, to just occupy their time, you know. But then they come home.
That's how.
And they don't.
Yeah. A lot of habits built like
mm-hmm.
that in prison, you know, that's what happens. Is, you know, you turn to something that may provide you, or you may turn to something that may provide you with a peace of mind. And
mm-hmm.
it may just be because you have to understand you have to find an outlet, right? When you're there, you have a mental outlet when you're in there, right? Because if you don't, you drive yourself fucking crazy. Like I said, in some people, it's working out. Some people, it's writing books. Some people, it's writing poetry. Some people, it's, you know, a lot of people turn to their faith. A lot of people turn to, you know, whatever it is they believe in, right? You know, but you have to, like, really go deep inside, like, harness the power of your mind to keep you, you know, level with it. Place, you know what I mean? So that's definitely
mm-hmm.
something that people do. Now, the thing about it is I've always, you know, before I've ever even seen a jail, I've always been into a creative writing, period. That was my strength in school. While I fucked up in school mostly was math, right? I couldn't stand math. I still can't stand that shit. But I've always, just because of my love for it, I've always read books. I've always, you know, I just love words. I've always had this love for words. And I always tell a story about how I used to get on my kids when they was little. I got by them like the whole little Disney collection, Mickey Mouse, all that stuff, and all them little books for them to read. And then
mm-hmm.
I remember I saw one on the ground, was like tore up and shit. And I went off because words are something that I've always been the one thing that is more valuable than money, right? So I've just always had this love for words. So whatever it is that you do, you kind of find comfort in that outlet and you exercise that, whatever that is. And do some people just use it as a pastime? Yes. But a lot of people, they see something in it that they didn't see that the streets, that being a free person didn't show, right? So say, for example, that may be
mm-hmm.
your gift. That may be what you were meant to do, but because of everything that was going on, sometimes you know, whoever it is you believe in, if it's the universe, if it's God, if it's Jesus, if it's a higher power, no matter what it is, sometimes that thing has to remove everything that's on the streets from around you and put you somewhere where you can focus, where they can show you, hey, this is what I have in store for you. This is where your strength is. Mm-hmm. You know, you're out there searching, you're out there looking. And so what happened? Yes, I love authors, artists, musicians, you know, a lot of people, you know, like they find that niche because you don't have anything else. You know, you have your day yard, you got your yard time and your phone calls out and, you know, your workout time and all this stuff. But then at the end of the night, when all this stuff is done, some doors pop and you got to go in and you're on lockdown and you're alone with your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when that shit comes out. And you still have mm-hmm. that time to deal with. If you study, if you're stressing about what's going on the streets, what's going on with your girl, you know what I'm saying, what's going on with your niggas doing, if you're stressing about that, if that's what you got your mind on, unless you're still working on your case, you might be working on your case. You know what I mean? You might not have been mm-hmm. sentenced yet. Mm-hmm. It depends. But I say all that just to say that at the end of the day, yeah, once all that shit is taken, what the world has to offer you, once all that is taken away, then what is it that you have? What is your gift? And sometimes it takes jail for that to manifest. Not saying all the time, not saying it should, but that's just how the fuck it is. In most cases, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so when did you always have a love of poetry? Like, when did you discover, your love for poetry that you decided that you wanted to, make like a career? Like, I don't know if you could call it a career because that's not all you do, but, when did you decide that, that this is something that you wanted to do to, explore?
It's funny because again, it was a hobby. It was a hobby of mine because I used to just be so mm-hmm. entertained with myself at what with wordplay, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're going back to when I was a kid. The funny thing is, I thought I was going to be like a cartoonist. This is something that I used to want to be a cartoon, want to draw. The only problem with that is I couldn't draw for shit. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like I couldn't draw for shit. I could never draw. And when I really knew, what really made me know that I had a really good words was when I remember this, me and this dude, we was got into this creative writing school. I think it was elementary school or whatever. And I used to I wanted to make comic books. That's really what I wanted to do. All my brothers were doing it. They could draw. I'm the youngest of all the boys or whatever. So my older brothers was like, we couldn't really afford comic books, so we would draw our own comic books and make our own comic superheroes or whatever. And so that's what I started doing. I remember I made up these superheroes that I wanted to put in this creative writing contest that we was having at school. I brought for the best friend collaborated at the time, but we kind of worked together on a book where he did the drawing and I did all of the, I told him what I wanted and I made up all of the, the dialogue that was in the comic book. We ended up, doing real good, got put in the showcase. And it's things like that. It was so many little different events where I've always excelled with my writing. And then that's why, I really like writing. I really like reading. I don't even know if it was I wanted to be a poet. It's just that I had a love for words, and it's just I still have that love for words to this day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you're actually, very, very good at it. So, where exactly would you like to see it grow? Like, and how long have you been poetry? Like, have you, done open mic before?
Wow. Oh yeah, I've done it all. I've done it all. I mean, I've performed on big stages. I mean, open mics are nice, but, you know, I actually like doing performances where I'm actually the feature. And so, I mean, and that's what I want to keep doing. I want to keep doing live shows. I would love to listen to the Ghost. I would love to get off, you know, maybe some songwriting. I would love to do that. I would definitely love to do that. And just roll with where it takes me.
Awesome. Okay, so do you write your own poetry?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, where do you find the inspiration to write the poetry that, okay, so you're, so, I want to go back on Spotify, but, you know, I've heard, like, a few of them, quite a few. So how many right now do you have available? How many do you have available on Spotify?
There's three on Spotify that I have available.
Okay.
There's three on Spotify. Yeah, but, I mean, I'm other places, too, even other people's stuff or on other places as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are interested in hearing some of my stuff that is not on Spotify, I actually do have some prepared if you want me to recite some of the stuff I have.
Yes, yes, yes. We would love that. We would love that. Okay, so, but before you recite one, I find, so your poetry is like, you know, sexually toned. Like, where do you find the inspiration
for
that?
Not all of it.
Okay. Well, the ones I heard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the ones. Well, that's my favorite genre.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my favorite genre.
What, sex?
So here it is. So, like the thing about it, like, so early on in my writing career, I used to be one of those, like, mad at the world, right? You had militancy. Which, I mean, I still have those thoughts. Don't get me wrong. I still have the social justice and, you know, conscious pieces. Don't get me wrong. And I love my consciousness. But it was like, you know, like I started, like, getting with, like, different groups. And, you know, they would, like, challenge me to, you know, expand it. Right, right. But, you know, at first it was, like, all about or what the government and like all that shit, right? But then I just began to really like have fun with it or whatever. And so then once I start really playing with like the erotic poetry, then it just like opened up a whole new world for me. So I just really like became a really big fan of erotic poetry and started writing up as well.
Okay. Erotica, I meant to say, I said sex. I meant erotica. Yeah. Your favorite dinner. So can you see yourself like writing like a book, like a full book, you know, or maybe like a book of poetry?
Well, you know, that, and that's something I struggle with. And here's why. Because of my style of poetry, a lot of people that try to read my poetry, and because I write my poetry in a wordplay type form, so the best way I could explain it is this. I remember I wrote this. Oh God, I wrote this incredible piece. This is when I was in college, right? So, we went on a field trip. My teacher took us to a field trip, and we had went to go listen to E. Ethelbert Miller. Do y'all know who that is?
No. Never heard of that one.
Okay. So he's the department head over the literary department at Howard University. He's one of the professors over there, but he's also a poet. And so I remember we went to go listen to him, or whatever. I was like real excited or whatever, right? And my teacher was like, you know, she was like hollering at him. She's like, go ahead, give him a piece of yours or whatever, and get his information, you know, because she really wanted me to be whatever, right? She was just really on my team. She was like really, really just, I don't know, for some reason she just thought, like, just saw it in me, right? So, and this was just one of the examples why. So she just like thought me to go ahead and give him one of my pieces. So I pulled out this piece that I had worked on, and I gave it to him. And like, I was all excited about it or whatever. And keep in mind, like, I've been doing wordplay since I wanted to be LL. That was the LL. That's like, to this day, that's my favorite rapper. I wanted to be LL. So I've been into wordplay since before LL, right? But LL is my dog. Like, you don't even know. Like, y'all don't even know. Mm-hmm. You don't even know. So I'm all excited and shit. I'm like, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll read it. He's like, give me your email. I'll get in contact with you. I was like, oh, shit. Right. So, like, he, like, literally read. I guess he read it. I don't know if he read it that night on his way back or whatever. All I know is, like, in a day or two, I had an email and shit. And I opened up the email. I was pumped. Man, this motherfucker dogged my shit. Right.
For real?
Oh, my. Listen, man, fuck that nigga. Like right now to this day, bitch ass nigga, right? But anyway, but I saw his points, don't get me wrong, but he judged it you gotta understand, you're talking to a guy that, again, hasn't really been past the 10th grade in high school, right? This is my first time ever on, like, any type of college level, right? And he judged it from where he sits, like, you know, as a department head over the literary department for Howard. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Coming from somebody who's, like, barely in community college, right? You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I was unprepared for him to, like, he went, I mean, he was, like, grading, like, the grammar and the the punctuation and all that shit. You know what I'm saying? None of my poetry has ever had grammar or punctuation, ever. And I don't even know punctuation enough to make it do that, right? So, like, he judges from that standpoint. He didn't even look at, like, the points I was making or nothing, what I was saying or what the piece meant, right? And so he was like, now, if you rewrite it, I mean, if you redo it and fix these things, like, it was, like, marks all over the motherfucking everything, right? So he's like, if you fix these things and send it back to me, I'll read it, and I'm like, fuck you. That's what my mind was thinking or whatever. Now, I probably should have sent it back. I probably should have redid it. But for that reason right there is why I don't write books, because I don't feel like people can really get my poetry from much rather record. Audio, yes, I'll do an audio book, but I won't do a book for somebody to read my poetry, because I don't think they'll get it all the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? An audio, like, you should definitely put their audio. You know, a lot of readers are into audio now. You know, I think audio, you know, coming from you would be excellent. You know, if I ever tell you, you know, that you have, like, mixed with your poetry, like the poetry that you spit, what makes it, you know, really captivating is your voice. Did I ever tell you sound like Barry White?
Barry White is a legend. I wish. I get Barry from time to time, but that's the legend. That's the legend.
No, you do. You sound a lot like him. I was like, because I didn't know really paid attention. Like, when I was a guest author on here last year, you know, on the other show. But I never heard your voice before, you know. So I remember when I had, I was co-hosting, you know, for the other show that I used to be on this network. And I was co-hosting, and then when you had, like, filled in, you know, for that person, attention because I was, you know, by myself. I didn't know what I was doing. And then when you came in, when I first heard your name, I'm like, what the hell is that? I said, is that Gary White going on here? I said, you sound like a lot like him. So, it's very interesting, too. The poultry, it makes the poultry, you know, that much more, captivating. It really, you know, so you have a gift and you can make the gift work for you because you could, capture the, the female audience. So when it comes to, all right. You know, whether it's music, rapping, an actor, and then author, you develop a fan base. You know, just like I remember, it's funny you say LL Cool J, I love LL Cool J, and I remember when LL was beefing with Kool Moe Dee years ago.
Yeah.
And Kool Moe Dee. Yeah, and then he had said, oh, was that matter of fact? No. It wasn't Kool Moe Dee that said it. It was when it was actually cannabis, when he was beefing with cannabis.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember.
And cannabis had said something, yeah, that line when he said 99% of your fans wear heels. And I'm like,
yeah.
Is that supposed to be an insult? So, that's not an insult because that works for him, a lot. And then LL did a couple, hardcore stuff here and there. But for the most part, his songs were directed towards, they were made for the ladies.
Right. Well, that was the later era. When you talk about the first, the first couple of albums, though, he didn't get he didn't start really doing it for the ladies. Until he went to where his career, where he saw, he flourished his sales or whatever. He started to use the sex appeal a little more later in his career. Which you can't hate on him for. He went where he saw his dollars was coming from. So I know what you mean. You really can't. If 99% of my fan base wear heels, nigga, when it comes to selling shows, who you think buying the ticket? So.
Yeah.
But
that whole sex symbol thing was something that kind of fell in his lap. Like I said, when you're an artist, when you're being marketed, you have, that's why, a lot of authors who have a promoter, a real good promoter is supposed to help an author, help them target, their audience. Who's really, paying attention to your books, And it's the same thing when it comes to the music world. You should have a publicist, an image publicist. So I think what happened with LL Cool J when he first started out, I followed him, that was my old school crush, so I followed, I watched all his interviews and everything. So I remember one particular interview he had enlightened on what took place and how he became a sex symbol, where it was just something that just randomly happened where he was I'm Bad. When he was shooting the video for I'm Bad, he actually had a shirt on, but it was real hot on the set, hot. And, you had to, do retaking. And he remember, and he was, really motivated. He wasn't going to stop until he got it right. We're not leaving him until we get this shit right, so we're going to do it over and over again. And he said he remember, that they pulled an all-nighter shooting my first video because he just had to get it right. He had to, become successful in this. This was his first video. And so, and was it I'm Bad or was it, I Can't Live Without My Radio? I think it might have been I'm Bad. And he ended up taking a shirt off.
Yeah.
in the middle shooting the video. And then after that, I can't remember who he said was like, you know what, you should do that. Like, take your shirt off, like, every time. And then so every time when he went on his first tour, his first performance, he would take his shirt off. And it drove the women crazy. And before you know it, it was more females were navigating towards him as an artist than the guys. And then the stuff he was writing about wasn't really something for dudes. He actually started,
Mona,
and it worked for him. Yeah.
On top of that, Mona, you got to think that was a battle. Going back to what you said about cannabis. So when rappers, when you're in the midst of a battle, you're going to try to say the worst thing you can think to say about somebody. And at that time, LL was so clean. LL was so clean, he ain't really had nothing on LL. And, you know, they had their own personal issue at the time because, you know, LL had a microphone on his own. And Cannabis said a rhyme in the song that they did together about the microphone. LL took that personal and almost took him off the song. So that's what ignited the beef or whatever. But what a lot of people don't know is LL was around some real dudes. If you look at the 80s and 90s and, you know, the drug, crack era and all that, LL was around some real dudes that used to tell him, yo, start talking about something other than what you see. So he was told to cater to the ladies. He was told to, you know, because the ladies are the biggest part of your demographic anyway. They're the main ones buying the music. So cater to them, and by catering to them, the guys are going to buy what you're doing too because that's what the women like. So that's how LL was able to win.
Well, then he started making a few songs that, you know, that were, you know, that were considered kind of hardcore, and I believe, you know, he decided to, you know, try to, you know, change his thing a little bit to try to, you know, navigate towards, like, the dudes also. Just like that song, you know, what is that, 4, 5, 3, 2, 1? That was like, that video.
That's
was
the song
hard.
That he almost kicked Cannabis off of.
I think he blew the whole thing out of proportion because Cannabis was actually trying to pay him a compliment. You know,
he was. Everybody said
and LL took it as an insult, and that was his ego. You know, he was very egotistic, and then so he decided to keep him on the song, but at the last minute, he changed his verse. This and Cannabis, and Cannabis was completely unaware that you know. I was watching that video. That's one of my favorite songs.
But then you got to think, too, LL was getting attacked by people other than Cannabis because at that time when LL got real popular, there was a lot of political rappers. You had, like, Public Enemy and, you know, the whole De La Soul wave, too. And LL was in a space where he was completely for the ladies at one point. So people was LL, calling LL soft and all types of other stuff.
But even before he asked him, they were bashing about how he wasn't messaging in his music, right? Because he had done two after years. That was a knock on. That was the knock on him. What are we talking about? 88? 89 or something like that. You know what I'm saying? That was a knock on him around, you know, that, you know, about 90. We're talking about 90, 91 maybe. That was a knock on him about, you don't put out enough messaging music because that's what was hitting. You know what I mean? You had De La Soul. You had the X-Clans. You had the Public Enemy. You know, you had all those groups that was out there, you know, kicking that message. So he wasn't putting enough messaging in his shit.
Right.
So then that's when, you know, he started coming, you know, started wearing African colors and, you know, so, I mean, it was like he did. He had a lot of different people. And it wasn't even that he wasn't doing that, in my opinion. it was just that, I mean, at the time, you got to understand, LL was considered the pinnacle. You know what I mean? I Run DMC, yeah, they was king at the time or whatever. But since Crush Groove, LL was like the face. He was like the face of hip hop. You know what I mean? So if you don't come out and you're going to attack somebody, you ain't going to attack motherfucking, who you coming from? You going for LL or whatever? He hadn't earned that respect yet. You know what I'm saying? Because he was kind of the young dude. You know what I mean? So yeah. they went for him. Wasn't nobody gonna fuck with DMC.
Right.
And then the next thing you know, Mama said, "Knock you out, King." And that was like, if you watch boxing, that was just him shooting a jab at people, like, "Get up off me."
Right. Yeah.
That's what that record was for.
Right.
But you know,
exactly.
LL is what, 54 now? So just to be able to say that I've been doing something for 35 years, come on, man, that's commendable in itself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And
man.
Not just doing it, but doing it at a high level.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. Okay, so the point that I was trying to make, though, was about the target area. So, you know, with your style of poetry, you know, so you basically, and I believe poetry, you know, is really a woman's thing anyway. Dudes ain't into poetry like that. But, you know, there's different styles of poet, you know, a lot of guys actually, you know, but it's more like put in rap form, you know, like, do you feel like where you from? You know, like in the street, do you feel like if you were still in the street and you was like reciting poetry, do you feel like it would be embraced by dudes from the street? Like if you had started doing it at early, like, you know, a young age?
Not only do I feel like it will be,
uh-huh.
I feel like it has been.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like it has
mm-hmm.
been.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I do it, with a particular confidence, right? One thing I've completely ran out of fucks to give about is what mm-hmm. niggas think about me about my poetry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've looked under mattresses, I've looked in old shit. I went through everything I could find. And I have not found one fuck to give about what somebody think about it, right? So that's the very first, that's the key to it right there. I'm just being honest. You know what I'm saying? I looked in like old pants pockets and shit, went through old wallets, mm-hmm. and I can't find no fucks to give. So that's the key.
Uh-huh.
That's the key to it, right? So I find that not only industry, like not only industry, but just about any environment that I go into, I wear it on my sleeve. You know what I'm saying? The way I dress, the way I look. But, you know, I'm a poet. People know that I'm a poet. And, you know, I've been at dinners with my family, you know, and, you know, my sister, you know, she just left with me, God rest her soul. She didn't come out of nowhere, you know, ask me to spit a piece. You know what I'm saying? I could be in any environment. So I say this to say that anybody that knows me knows one of the main things about me is that I'm into poetry. Not because I spit poetry, live my life on a poetic basis. Everything about my life is poetry. So that's where a lot of my inspiration comes from. So if they already know that that's about me, that's what's in my DNA, then it's no surprise that I'm now. Surprise them piece now that they're going, you know, if we the surprise or the wow, he said he do poetry, if we can get past that, now they can listen to the content of my poetry. And that's what I feel the reception come in, because the content of what I'm saying is so relatable or so intriguing that you can't help but to receive it. And I don't say that to be arrogant. I just say it because that's what I do. That's what I am, and I'm not going to put out shit that's fake.
Right. That's awesome. Okay, so we're here chatting with the CEO of Just a Night Network, Aziz Pulmonologist Robinson. Please call in 646-378-0355. Press 1 if you would like to ask a question. Okay, so can you see yourself putting more poetry onto Spotify? Do you have poetry on any other platform besides Spotify?
No, I mean all my tracks are basically on Spotify.
Okay.
I mean, you might find some on other places. They all kind of escape me right now. But I mean, you could Google Pulmonologist, and it's pretty much just going to tell you anything about me or my tracks.
Right. So, have you used your poetry like in the past to
we talked about this shit.
What's up with you?
We talked about this shit.
Whoa, what happened?
What is wrong with you?
I didn't think that then. Oh my god, this is okay. We can do it on talent. Alonzo, help me. Like, what did I do? What did I do wrong?
No, fuck her. You like,
no, he was calling him out.
How cool is him? I
think,
listen, I ask the questions that the people want to know.
We're already discussing this shit.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
I'm fine. What's your name?
MD Live.
Hello.
Yo, what up, MD? Oh, this is my. This is actually. Here's the funny part. Y'all talking to one of Drifting Mike's own. This is MD Live. Okay.
Yo, what's good, my brother?
He was good, man. He's actually a dope poet and author in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
Big time, man. I appreciate you calling in.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
I just want to say, how's everything been going, Mr. Officer?
Man, listen, man.
Next month.
It's been lovely.
Next month, you'll see why I call you Mr. Officer.
Mr. Officer, you know what? Listen, y'all. See, before we even go over here, let me say, man, listen, y'all don't even understand how dope of a writer this brother is. I'm talking about, the cliffhangers that he put together, his imagination is just unmatched, man. This brother is just dope. This brother is just officer. There's something in it. That's something that it makes. My question is, can we bring this to Drift the Mic, though?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
I would love to chat with you.
Okay.
So, formally, let me make a formal introduction. This is MD Live. This is Literary Talks. So you're listening to Mona and her co-host Elijah right now.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Elijah is the host of Unapologetic also.
Okay, man. That. Oh, excuse me. It's been a minute since I spoke to my brother, so.
Yes, yes, man. Listen, man, you don't even know how surprised I am right now that you called in, bro. Thank you so much. This is a, like, man, this is a really, really, really dope surprise, man, to hear from you.
Yeah, man. Hey, man, I've been doing a couple of things down here in Dallas, man, just hoping one day I can get you down here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I would love to.
Yeah, because I've been going to open mics every Monday, and now I'm starting to do a open mic show over here at my job for the residents, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'd love to come up there and help you out, bro. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, my son used to jump on, drip the mic with me sometimes.
Right.
Well, actually, I got two special things for you coming next month, so I'm going to have to hit you up and DM you so I can get your address and send it to you, man. One of them is it's for you, but it's more for the missus.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, definitely inbox me then, man. Inbox me because I'm a so I can shoot you my info.
Oh yeah, most definitely, man. Most definitely.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So we gonna hear some of your dopeness tonight, bro.
I don't know. I'm on the other side today. I'm not hosting tonight. I'm a guest tonight, so I'm gonna see what the host has.
Oh, yeah.
Since we do have you here, though, I mean, can we have him spit a piece? We usually don't have poets come through and, you know, open up our mics that they, you know, it costs a piece.
Right. Oh, no. I mean, hey, I would love to hear something. No, I don't mind. Sure, go ahead. Would love to hear something.
Okay, well, MD, you know how we do this. Don't you try to be slick. Don't you try slick. You already know how we do this.
I got you.
You already know how we do this. One moment, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Can you make this mic grip?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And
the mic is yours.
All right, this is a piece called Excuse Me.
Okay.
Excuse me, miss. I don't mean to approach you like this. A few days ago, your appearance and essence enveloped me. And today, I couldn't let you just walk by without saying hello. I know you may think I'm just like the other guy, but I ask that maybe we go out so that you can get to know me. Wait, before you answer and before I proceed, if I may ask, are you married? Do you have kids? If so, are you happy? Is there father in their lives? If no, can I show you how he was supposed to love you? Can I someday show your kids what a father is supposed to do? I know you may think I'm only attracted to your physical, but please let me say, I would love to get to know your mental. In peace.
Oh, alrighty then. Damn.
Yeah. I told you he was dripping mic.
Oh my God. He made that mic drip. Oh, I like that. Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, wow. I really love that.
No, good.
Oh, that is beautiful. So where can we find your poetry?
Well, right now I'm still just basically on Facebook. I'm actually gonna start posting my open mics on Facebook whenever I go out to the open mic. There's one that I really want to post on there because it'll be my mom's first time ever seeing me on stage. And so I wrote a piece specially for her that night.
Oh.
So I'm going to share that on Facebook.
Okay, so will you be going live on Facebook?
I want to go live, but I'm a little bit too nervous to go live. So when I go when I go do my open mics, my wife records it for me, and I'm just start posting them on my Facebook page. It's been a lot going on over here, man. Trying to get things set up.
Yes, sir.
Right, so, right.
When I get a chance to go out there and do what I do, I just get out there and do it, man.
That's what's up right there.
Oh. Well, that is awesome. Well, please, I'm going to get your name from IZ's, but I would love to, you know, for you to tag me when you're when you're doing your open mic on Facebook. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
oh, wow, looking forward to that.
I pull a lot of my inspiration from where is that Mr. Officer Roberts. I keep a lot of his words in my head.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that, brother. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, man. It's you and Mrs. Robertson, bro. To be honest, y'all are the reason why my pen is still writing because I was ready to give up.
Wow. Oh, wow. Wow, brother. That's big right there. That means so much, brother.
Hey, man, because I didn't have any audience. I didn't have an audience until I heard you speak.
You love your parents.
And I heard your wife speak, and I was like, hey, I want to get down with them one day. I just want to jump on something they doing. So I did, and then it's been nothing but love coming from and your wife and the rest of the Drifter Mike family, bro.
Yes, sir.
With that being said, you know, I had to pay homage to the Drifter Mike family, everybody. I could name everybody, but I did have to, you know, pay homage to you guys on my upcoming book.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. You know, I had to put a couple of names in there of people who really inspired me to keep writing, bro. So just be looking out, and I'm going to send you what I got for you.
Okay, I'm going to be. I'll get that information. I'm supposed to slide the information in your inbox tonight, brother.
Oh, yeah. Now that it's finally happened, is Ms. Robinson on here?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Now that it's finally out, and well, it's not out yet, but now that it's finally coming to fruition, thank you for keeping that secret for me.
Not a problem. It was hard.
So Mr. Robinson, I got not only you, but I got something for Mr. Meadows, too.
Okay.
So I'm
well, brother, I definitely appreciate your thoughts, man.
And then, hey, I'm telling y'all, bro, it's more or less my way of saying thank you. Thank Mr. Meadows. Thank Ms. Subliminal, Ms. April. You know, that's my way.
Yes.
Of saying thank you, because like I
yes,
said,
sir.
without running into you cats, I would have stopped writing a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. And we're so glad that you did. We enjoy your pen. Yeah.
And Ms. Robinson.
Yes, sir.
I don't mean to be dragging this all out, but I just started writing another poetry book that I think some of your constituents would like. It's a erotic, female erotic poetry.
Okay.
So I'm picking up opinion from something I heard you read a while back.
Oh, wow. I'm humbled.
Yeah, I'm going to jump out and let some more people call in, because I'm pretty sure it's a lot of people got something to say and want to hear Mr. Robinson. But I'm going to stay late.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the love, my brother.
Always, brother.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Alrighty. Oh, that was awesome. That was great. Don't forget to give me his name on Facebook, Aziz.
I will.
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay, so now we want to hear something from you. You ready to recite something?
All right. Definitely. I'm going to do a piece called Addiction.
Okay.
In the beginning, we kicked it, but my intentions were never meant to be an addiction. No Surgeon General label warning against affliction, advising me to avoid the need to taste of your dripping repetition. I've become a dependent. Your bit position, attracted to your lips and the way you be licking, and when I be hitting, the reaction you be giving be having me tripping, like some flipping hallucinogens in my system. Alcohol, nicotine, cocaine, and speed, that shit can't be much driven. I was given a way of life, now you are like my religion. You are the gift that's constantly given. The dialogue anatomy keeps my constant attention, because when I listen, the pistons in my engine pumps adrenaline to a system that triggers my rocket off, now I'm listening. Dick is so hard it can be you freaking. The richness of your thickness be having your jeans fitting. That nasty ass walking exact switching when you know I'm in your vision, when you know you're in my vision. If I was on parole for failure to control keeping my distance, a near mention with how my pupils swole, I started to lip licking. Violated and put in the whole side effects, and effect got me so snitching. This addiction, this vice, this calling my name every day, I got to have it twice. And when that ended, I refueled my ammunition while reminisce, talking my equipment in preparation for the next inquisition. Patient but anxiously to put the tip in. Our enemies reactive. Each becomes complementive at the way we collision. As I'm determined to make every inch fit in. That's when you always blast me with your tsunami like dripping. Index finger and thumb impressed with your breast, perfect and right for light nipple pinching. But only the left one, cause like that old movie, your right is already once bitten. Due to how smitten I was by your gripping, the first time I stepped in, my sensory become fit demented. And damn the sound I would be making if I wasn't teeth clenching. Toes avoiding any semblance of any extension, curled up tight as if kneeling to express contrition. Tension in my ligaments like rigor mortis is kicking in. I'm driven in by the phenomenal element that hides within your melanin, continually dwelling in the attention of my addiction. And that's my drip.
Yes, 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 it is. Oh, wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Mr.
Good work, brother. That sounds like good work to me.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Just snap up.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you.
That was awesome.
Thank you kindly. Appreciate it.
Every time I hear you,
recite a poem, I think about Love Jones. That's like one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, yeah, Love Jones.
And
instant classic.
Yes, and so yes, yes, it is a classic, and I love the open mic. You know, when Darius recites his poem in the beginning, like that's my, I love the beginning of that movie. You know, so
yes.
And that, I think after seeing that movie, that's when I really became a fan of, you know, open mic, you know. And so, that was awesome. So, so we definitely, I look forward to, you know, because I love open mic. I haven't been to an open mic, you know, in a long time, but I really want to start going again. It's like such a relaxing, like, you know, thing to do. You know, you go to an open mic
vibe.
And you hear some, oh my God, it's really a relaxing vibe. You know, you're around grown folks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like just chilling, you know, you're drinking, you're listening to, you know. It's a beautiful thing to do. You know, I haven't done it in so long. It's really been years, you know, since I've attended an open mic. So I really, really would love to, you know, I don't do the club scene. Last time I did the club scene was like in my 20s, you know. I don't have no desire to go to the club scene, but I love going to a lounge, you know. You know, I love listening to jazz, you know, nice mellow music,
mm-hmm.
you know, grown people having, you know, grown conversations, and then it is a great vibe. It's a great thing to do as a couple.
Definitely.
It's a great thing to do. Now I just got to find somebody to couple with. But it's definitely a thing to do. Elijah.
Yes.
Elijah. Okay, do you like open mic? You know, attending like an open mic?
Yeah. I think me and you had this conversation last year. I'm actually contemplating writing a couple of poetry books because that's something mm-hmm. that I did as a teenager. But writing novels came to me quicker. But I'm constantly jumping into poetry. I love open mics and all that. Definitely.
Right. Well, I definitely look forward to attending a few open mics, you know, featuring Mr. Aziz's poem, I was doing so well. Poemanologist.
I will say this, though. If I did it, it wouldn't just be a book. I would really, like, want to hit the road with it, even if it was the tri-state area, and do,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, some local spots. And like I said, it would be a show. Like, I would have to get a band together and, like, really be on stage with me and make it interactive. It wouldn't just be me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't just be me.
I can see that.
You know, that's part of the reason why I haven't done it yet, because I want it to be the right time.
Yes.
Because I would definitely make a production out of that. You know, that's something that's near and dear to me.
Beautiful. All right, so do you have any last-minute questions for Poemanologist? This has been a very, very beautiful interview. You know, I've kind of, saved you. My questions haven't really got answered, but I'm going to leave it alone. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'm gonna let you pass for now.
Yeah, going for audition.
Yeah, I'm gonna let that pass. So Elijah, you have any last minute questions?
Nope, not so much a question, just, you know, more of a statement. Keep pushing, bro. Keep going on with the writing.
I'm sure that when it's time for you to hit the stage, you'll probably do the same thing I want to do as well. It'll be more of like an interactive show. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And also, when I put my fall lineup together, I'll definitely be getting in touch with you to come to Unapologetic as well.
I'm looking forward to it, brother. I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. I just started, so I'm only like maybe two interviews in. And like I said, they'll start dropping around August for the fall lineup.
Okay.
So I'll definitely be in touch with you before then.
All right. Well, favorable, brother. You know that.
Definitely.
Yes. Well, this has been very interesting. Okay, so if anybody, anybody would like to still call in to access their IV's pulmonology for question, you have about,
Let me say this real quick. Tomorrow night, listen, y'all do not want to miss tomorrow night's show right here on Drift the Mic. The Black Poetry Cafe is back in the building. The Black Poetry Cafe is the first show that I ever did my radio poetry on. It was around before there was even a Facebook. Mark is like my big brother. So they're finally back. They're back in action. So we're doing a welcome back open mic party for them tomorrow. So if y'all just want to hear some dope poetry from everywhere, all around, just different genres, different subjects, call in because we're going to have a party same time tomorrow, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. Call in tomorrow. Just if for nothing else, show support. If you got something you want to spit, bring it along. If you just want to bring a comment, but we're gonna be doing it big tomorrow, man. Just for the Black Poetry Cafe. So come on in and just welcome them back with us, y'all.
Oh yes, I'll definitely tune in for that. What time does it start?
Same time. 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, yes. So you right here, sis. Everybody, make sure you call them. 646-378-0355. It's the, what is it called? The Media Cafe? The poems? What is it called?
Yeah, the Black Poetry Cafe.
Black Poetry Cafe. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central.
Yeah.
So if anybody would like to call in, you got about, literally 1 minute. But thank you. This has been very, very, I think we should do a part two on you, because I feel like I didn't ask anything I like to ask.
Let's have a part two.
Yeah. I think we should definitely do a part two. I feel like I didn't ask everything that I wanted to ask. I'm just not letting my questions down. Yeah, because I
might
just
be able to
start. All right. You said you might.
Baby.
You said maybe?
Maybe.
Why maybe?
But it depends on what you're going to ask. You know, when you're writing questions and shit down.
Okay, well, I'll give you the questions ahead of time.
I might have a good list of questions.
Because I freestyle my interviews, so I don't send questions to the authors. My interviews are pretty much freestyle, and then it just flows. I like a natural, conversation. I don't like preset interviews. It sounds robotic. When you send the questions ahead of time and then you read the questions and they're answering word for word answering the questions. So I like having I like for my interviews to sound like a conversation, like two people are at a restaurant, at a diner, at a lounge, just chilling and just having a flowing conversation. So
Got it.
Right. And then it works. And then, you know, we end up like, you know, then we end up, you know, just talking naturally. So, and then you try to stay on topic. But it's a beautiful thing. So I want to send a shout out to all the authors so far, you know, guest stars, literary talks on Mona. You know, I've learned so much a lot about a lot of the authors that I was not aware of. You know, so thank you to all the authors who have showed up and really, like, you know, opened up and, you know, in addition to, I like to call it, like, when it comes to the men, I use this term, the pen, the man behind the pen. So the ladies, you know, for the month of May, you know, the ladies behind the pen, it's been very interesting to learn about the authors, like not just, you know, them as authors, but them as people. They shared their background with me, you know, and it's just a beautiful thing, and I really, really appreciate it, you know, for everybody who has, you know, opened up. So thank you so much. So June is, my background is loud. What is that? So I'm waiting for him to confirm, but as of now, he's they're scheduled to be here. And this coming Saturday, Chris Lowry, author Chris Lowry. So looking forward to that. And I can't think of the rest of the lineup for the rest of the month, but yeah, it's going to be Rainy Moon. So thank you, everybody who has, you know, calling. What did you say? Did somebody say so?
No,
oh,
I didn't.
I thought I heard somebody say something. Oh, I thought I heard somebody say something. Well, yeah, so thank you, everybody that has called in, you know, to engage in conversation with us, who called in to interact with our guests. So I look forward to more call-ins in the future. So that's about it. Elijah, any last minute before we sign off?
Just keep tuning in. You never know what type of craziness you might miss out on.
We gotta put Elijah
on the ball over here. This is Unapologetic Junior. You know,
yeah.
My show, it gets a little too crazy. You know, we can't go live, but over here we live with it, and it's still unapologetic. So,
right.
Tune in. Keep tuning in every Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah. Yes. Wednesday and Saturday. And, I mean, it's me, energetic schedule, brother.
Huh?
Inbox me an unapologetic schedule when you get a chance.
I got you.
All right, bet.
And we ain't doing no hot seat moment. You've been putting me in the hot seat since you met me. I done did like 5 interviews with you.
No,
not
even. You did one interview with me.
No, I did two in your book club on Facebook, and then I did your IG live show too.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I should be an alumni by now.
No,
I did two interviews with you in the book club.
When?
Talks to the Heart. I did one for Baby Mama Games when that came out, and then Make
That was a book discussion.
It's the same thing.
Those were book
thing.
Discussions. No, it's not the same thing. We were discussing the books. We were discussing
Ramona,
books. Interview
we discussed
and
the book for like 5 minutes. We discussed the book for like 5 minutes, and then we went off to other stuff.
You know books. No, I don't remember that. You're talking about those like Q&As. Q&As are, like, I don't miss Q&As when you sit in there at the keyboard.
Sound like excuses,
typing
moment.
In the question. No, I love.
See, bro,
love
this is what I go through.
Now, even though I'm shy, I love the live interviews and I love the podcast where I'm actually talking and interacting.
This is what
Yo.
I go through, bro. This is what I go through with Mona. When she want me to do something, she catch amnesia. Like, she didn't ask me to do this before.
Yeah, no, because you're, first of all, there should be an expiration date on interview. If you did an interview with me 5 years ago, like, it's sort of like registration, you know, or a car registration. Like, you're due for renewal, like, every 1 or 2 years. Every 2 years. So if you did an interview with me 5 years ago, so then you're due for a new interview, you know, because you've done new things in 5 years. You done released new books, like the new readers that you accumulated want to hear from you. So you need to do an interview at least every 1.5 to 2 years. So your interview with me for 5 years ago has expired. And then you did a live.
Wow, I never heard of that before.
Right. See, you hear how bananas she is? It expired. You need to renew it.
What the fuck?
Just demanding, bro. She just.
I never heard no shit like that before. What the fuck? Your interview expired? What the fuck?
If that's the case, Unapologetic is off the air. We need to redo Mona's interview on that show. It expired. It's over.
Oh, my
Right.
Wait, but no,
like your shit just soured or some shit. I ain't never heard of that shit. What is it, a dollar in the milk or some shit?
No, I'm just saying, like, you know.
She just want me in the interrogation seat, that's all. She want to shine the bright light in my face. And ask
right. See, that's that slick shit. That's that slick shit. She tried it on under. And she went right off into another conversation as if, like, you was just going to let that slide. Your shit expired. And anyway, blah, 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 blah. Like,
no. No.
She just want to put the bright light in my face and say so. So how did you come up with the unapologetic podcast ID?
No, because I feel
and where were you at 10:03 last night?
Right.
We did.
And do you have an alibi?
Okay, right. Well, we did a live, and you did a live interview with me when I started doing live interviews last year in Katori's Hidden Lethal Group. You were, like, one of my first, you know, guest authors. And that interview was
right.
So cool, but remember? Because technically that interview doesn't count because remember we were having technical difficulties and it actually ended short.
So
that wasn't like a full interview. No, remember we were having technical difficulties and Facebook, like the interview, the video ended.
Like
and then all right. I'm going to tell you what.
I'm going to give you one more. Since I've done everything you did, Mona. I did the book discussions. I did the IG Live. You're going to do one more, and I'm retired.
Yeah. No, you can retired. Like I said, when you're
no,
an
no,
author,
no, 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 we need to hear you agree to this. No. Don't get all happy and all that shit. We need to hear full agreement to what he said and the fact that he understood that. Because next time you're going to tell him he said was you was going to give him, yeah, he was going to give you.
I can't agree until I have to clarify what he meant. So hold on a minute. Okay.
Wow.
He's saying
I see what you're going through, man.
Exactly.
No, wait a minute. I need to clarify first. Okay, so let me get this straight. You're gonna do one more interview with me, then after that's it. So what you mean you're retiring? Are you retiring as an author? Because as long as you're an author, you're due for an interview like every year and a half.
Not to come off cocky or nothing like that, because I'm a very humble guy. But I have a platform named Unapologetic, so you can tune in every episode and hear something from me about my career.
You can tune in
and hear a commercial about the next book.
But I don't hear the stuff that I want to know.
I'm every day, Mona.
Yeah, but I don't call you every day. What are you talking about? But listen, I did a three hour interview with you. Like, that's the longest interview. Three and a half. Like, you had to break my segment three papers, you know, because I talked to you. And I still
and
feel like
what?
I didn't tell, but I told you a lot. That's
Mona,
the longest interview I've ever done in my whole 8 years as an
Mona. Mona, guess what?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You was on my show, and I owe you one. Not yearly. It ain't expired. I owe you one. All right? Now, once you get that one, my debt is paid. My debt to Mona Society is paid. I'm a free man.
Well, let me tell you something. You know what? As an interviewer, I think I'm going to make that part in, like, a criteria for all authors. You know, and they, I think it comes with being an author that you should do an interview, at least three interviews per year, you know, because the readers want to hear from you, especially if you're an author who don't post. You know how a lot of these authors, they're posting every day. They're very candid about themselves. So the readers they're interactive. I'm one of those authors. I don't interact with the readers that much. So when I do an interview, people tune in
you know, because they're eager to hear from you, from me. So it's a marketing strategy. The readers are eager to hear from you, like, oh, wow, wait, Mona's interviewing Elijah Foreman? Okay, what's he up to? I haven't heard from him in a while. You haven't released anything in a while. Yeah, you got the show Unapologetic, but you're interviewing other authors. So when people tune in, you might say something here and there in reference to you, but the readers are not really hearing from you. Like that. They want to know what's up. When is the next read? Like, when are you dropping another book? Like, you know, they want to know what's up with Elijah.
Aziz, this is what we're going to do, bro. I'm going to reword this. This is the deal. This is what Mona wants. Mona wants the exclusive. So that means that whenever I drop a new project, I got to go see Mona. How that sound?
No. Well, I think I should squeeze you in for this month. It's Male Authors Month.
You already got Male Authors Month book.
Well, check this out. June 22nd, I didn't have – no, listen to me. June 22nd, I didn't have anybody scheduled. So I decided to make June 22nd a special segment where I'll be announcing my 15 favorite male authors. My 15 favorite male authors. So I'm going to announce it here on the show. I'm going to, count them down from number 15 to number 1. And I already made my list. I have a list in my file, in my laptop. And after the show, I'm going to post my list on Facebook for whoever didn't tune in. But that's going to be the segment for the 22nd, where I'll be, you know, shouting out my 15. I'm gonna count down my 15 favorite male authors of all time.
Am I on the list?
When I talk, so you.
Did I make the list? If I ain't make the list, I ain't doing it now. If I ain't make the list.
Oh, you wanna do? Oh yeah, you welcome. You wanna do your list?
I wasn't on the list before.
What? Who
wasn't on the list? All that stuff you just did, I wasn't on the list.
Actually, no, I never made a list of my favorite authors before. I've made my favorite books. I did something a few years ago in my group, Talks of the Heart, where I had counted down my top 100 books for that particular year. And I remember people was like in their feelings. They said, "Who listens to this?" I said, "It's not my top favorite books." And people were mad. They felt like they favorite. Listen, I don't do favoritism. I count them down according to my favorite. How are you going to get mad for my favorites? Like, that's my favorite. You know, so once again, these are going to be my favorite 15 male authors, Mona's favorite. I don't want to hear, you know, nobody could call in. I don't care. But I don't want to hear no debate, no arguments, no nothing, because you're not going to debate me on what my favorite is. Okay? These are my favorite.
And I want the exclusive, but I'm not on the list.
No, what? Well, do you want to know what? Well, first of all, it's supposed to be a surprise, you know, of who the 15 names are. But since you're asking, I'm going to give you the exclusive. Yeah, you are.
I'm putting you on the hot seat the way you just did me and Brother Aziz.
I'm not going to tell you what number you are on the list. And then another thing I will do, when I count them down, I'm starting from number 15 to number 1. I rate them based on the pen game, the strength of the pen game. Like this one particular author, you know, I had sent a list to him to say, "Look, what you think of my list?" And he was like, "Well, I don't know why I'm on here, because you got some heavy hitters on this list. I shouldn't be on here." And this particular author, he downplays his talent, you know, and I tell him that all the time, stop doing that. Don't do that with me, you know, because I hate that. He underestimate himself. So he was like,
I don't even belong on here. And I'm like, what? No, yeah, you do belong on here. And I didn't make him number one because I don't do favoritism. I got him on the list, but he's actually in the top five. Now, if I was doing favoritism, because me and him are real close, I could have put him number one. But no, I put my top two and I even told him, I said, you see how you're this number and you're not number two, you're not number one? Because those two authors that I put number two, number one, their pen games are official. And you got the potential to get there one day. But you're not there yet. But my number two and my number one are official. So I can't wait till the 22nd when I count down, you know, my top 15. And I'm going to explain why, like, starting number 15, I'm going to explain why each author is at the number, why one author is at number 15 and why number one is number one. So I can't wait. It might be a little controversial, you know, but I don't care, you know, because once again, it's my favorite. So you want to know if you're on that list, Elijah? Yeah, you are. But I'm not going to tell you what number you're in. So do you want to do your top 15? You want to do your favorite 15? You want to do your top 15?
I can. I've got 15 authors I can put on the list. You can do that.
All right, cool. Put this together, and I'm going to count down my top 15. You're going to count down 15, and we're going to have fun with it. Because we have to.
Is it just males, or could it be males and females?
Well, I was making it males in honor of, because it is, you know, in honor of, you know, for Males Month. So, I mean, we could do male this month, and next month we could do, you know, females for next month. We could
I might not have 15 guys. I'm going to be honest. I might have 10 guys, if that. I'm going to be honest. 15? But I'll put them list together for you.
Awesome.
I don't follow guys like that, to be quite honest. You know, I love the ladies. I'm sorry.
This industry is very female, you know. It's dominant. Oh, okay. I was about to say, shoot, because you could have told me there's not 15 guys. There's more than enough male authors in this industry. It's not as much as the female author. The female authors, we run the urban fiction world. You know, it's very female, you know.
The ratio is like 10 to 1 at this point.
Well, sadly, and that's mostly because there's a lot of undiscovered talent as far as, like, you know, among the male authors, because a lot of them are incarcerated. Some of them haven't had anybody to sign them. Some of them can't find nobody to type. They can't afford to hire somebody to type their manuscript, so they can't submit their manuscript. I don't recommend for a male author who's incarcerated to just mail your manuscript out to just anybody. You know, so I think that's a lot of mistakes that a lot of, you know, incarcerated authors make. You know, don't just mail your manuscript out to just anybody. A lot of them having trouble finding people to type their manuscript for them. So it's a very doggy dog world. But anyway, next month, we're going back to the ladies for next month. It's a female authors. Next month is. It's going to be actually a very hectic month for me. July 9th is not going to be no show. It's my daughter's birthday. And then the weekend of the 15th, 16th, I'm supposed to be in Atlanta. So we'll see that. We'll check. I'm supposed to be doing a lot.
On the 22nd. I might still be recovering, because the day before that is the big 3-0 for me. So if I do too much celebrating.
Recovering?
Yeah.
Oh, the day before, on the 21st?
Yes. Turning 30 this year, yes.
milestone.
All right. Oh, man, we definitely got to do a celebration on the 22nd here on Just a Mic. It's going to be Eliza's 30th birthday.
Oh, God. You're so young.
Yeah. I think so old.
I get that a lot.
You're a baby.
I get that a lot. You know, at first glance, it don't look
young.
That way. You know. But, hey.
Well, you were young when
that's
I met you.
That's where Calendar fell for me. Right. I was like 22, 23 when you met me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Time for me to touch the 30s. 20s are over with.
Right.
20s are over.
Shout out to the
30s.
Yes, yes. All right. So this has been another interesting show. I'm glad everybody's back. I'm so lonely here by myself. So, all right. So we're going to tune in tomorrow night for the cafe, the New Year cafe. What is it called? Poetry Cafe? Cafe Poetry.
The Black Poetry Cafe.
Black Poetry. So who's going to be on you? Is it going to be you and several other poets?
Yeah, I'll be hosting
okay.
with a couple of other poets from the Black Poetry Cafe. But then we're going to have poets call in, so it's going to be a full line of poetry.
Oh, so you make me want to get back to my poetry mode. I used to write poetry.
Well, I mean, if you got a piece, come through and we'll pull you in so you can spit it.
Well, shout out to my partner, Jabril Williams. He writes poetry. I'm going to try to see if I get a piece from him, and I'll recite it on here. And then I actually know a few authors who are excellent poems. There's very a lot of unhidden talent among these male incarcerated. I know another male incarcerated author who I collaborated with. He does poetry too. So I'll try to see if he can't call in because he's incarcerated. But I'll try to see if I can get. Well, I don't know if I get him a piece, but I'll see if I can get something from Jabril Williams, and I read.
If you get a piece from him, call in and spit it for him.
Yes. All righty, everybody. Thank you, right, thank
Joe.
You, thank you.
Okay.
Good night. Good night.
Have a good night. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Okay, so I had came up with a starting off little, you know, things like a little, it's sort of like it was sort of like a little poem, and I did it last week, but I never wrote it down, so now I forgot. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, everybody, for making Drip the Mic, Literary Talks with Mona on Drip the Mic Network, our success. And until next time, God, I forgot my little thing, you know, peace, love, something. I forgot. I'll write it down. But have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, Jim. Don't it seem like I'm always there when it matters, but missing most of the other time, a terrible pattern. The rewards I see from working have made me an addict. There's way more people that want it than people that have it. I don't get it, I would hate to think I tricked them. They fall victim to my system, guess I sure know how to pick them. And I'm always to regret, yeah, I'm always to regret. And I always make it harder on whoever's coming next. It goes up and down, it's just up and down. She's crying now, but she'll laugh again, cause we on the rise.